When he was still in school, not so very long ago, 25-year-old Jonathan Safran Foer planned to write a history of his grandfather, rescued during World War II by a mysterious woman.
In the summer after my sophomore year, I made a trip that this book is based on to the Ukraine, to a small town that actually used to be in Poland. And I was in search of a woman who I'd been told saved my grandfather during the war. So I made this incredibly foolish journey. And it was foolish because all I had was this one photograph of my grandfather and this woman, Augustine, we think, who I went searching for. And it was absolutely as foolish as taking a photograph to New York City and saying, have you ever seen this person before, 50 years after the fact?
Finding nothing but a remnant of the village of Trachenbrunn, Safran Foer filled the void. The result is an imaginative, quirky new novel called Everything is Illuminated, in which the author is also a character. It's filled with offbeat personalities, including the novel's narrator, a translator named Alex, whose English is so fantastically gnarled and full of malapropisms, it will have you laughing out loud. Everything is Illuminated also turns into a history of the lost shtetl, including the story of Yankel, an outcast moneylender, and a foundling baby girl named Broad.
Yankel is a disgraced usurer, although we don't know exactly why he's disgraced. It seems like his disgrace is the source of his disgrace. And a tiny baby appears in the village at the very beginning of the book. It's the first, it's actually the second chapter. And there's been some sort of accident. We don't know what it was, but somehow a wagon has tumbled into the river.
And a whole life is swirling up to the surface.
Right. All of these artifacts of some life, we think of some life. And then from all of this mess, eventually comes a baby. And this baby is Broad.
Her name is Broad.
Her name is Broad. And Yankel wins her in a lottery and takes her home and loves her very much, or thinks he does. And in fact, their story is an examination of their love, their parental love, their strange, almost romantic love, love between generations, love between idealized heroic notions of love and the reality of love.
Well, you have so many characters wandering around in here. In the contemporary story, you have Jonathan Safran Foer and Alex, and Alex's grandfather, who's their driver, looking for this village which will no longer exist. What happens when the grandfather and Jonathan and Alex go to the village of Trachenbrunn? Because they do find where it used to be.
Right. It's a string of misadventures, really, where they don't know where they're going, they don't know what to ask of whom, and are stopped in their tracks, really, at every turn. And ultimately, they do meet one person in particular with whom they spend an afternoon.
An old woman who they think might be the woman they're looking for. They have a photograph, one photograph, just as you did.
Right.
There is the most wonderful, wonderful, heartbreaking part where Alex asks her again and again and again. Could you read that part
sure.
for us?
Then I remember that I'd taken the photograph of Augustine, and although I do not know what it was that coerced me to feel that I should, I rotated back around and displayed the photograph to the woman. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? She examined it for several moments. No. I do not know why, but I inquired her again. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? No, she said again, although the second no did not seem like a parrot, but like a different variety of no. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? I inquired. And this time I held it very proximal to her face, like grandfather held it to his face. No, she said again, and this seemed like a third variety of no. I put the photograph in her hands. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? No, she said, but in her no, I was certain that I could hear, please persevere, inquire me again. So I did. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? She moved her thumbs over the faces, as if she were attempting to erase them. No. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? No. She was humming again, with more volume. Have you ever witnessed anyone in this photograph? No, she said, no. I saw a tear descend to her white dress. It, too, would dry and leave a mark. Have you ever witnessed anyone in the photograph? I inquired, and I felt cruel. I felt like an awful person, but I was certain that I was performing the right thing. No, she said. I have not. They all look like strangers. I periled everything. Has anyone in this photograph ever witnessed you? Another tear descended. I have been waiting for you for so long. I pointed to the car. We are searching for Trachimbrod. Oh, she said, and she released a river of tears. You are here. I am it.
This is a book about connections.
Very much so. And writing it was about making connections. The way I write, or the way I wrote this book, could be described as intuitive or could be described as crazy, because I didn't know what I was doing. But I was pursuing certain feelings and pursuing my own imagination, and then finding the connections, just as sort of happens in history. These events lead us in places we were never, lead us to places we were never expecting to go, and the connections come after.
Your translator in this book, I don't know if this happened in real life, is one of the funniest characters I've ever read about in fiction, Alex Perchoff. And one of the things that makes him so funny is that nobody but a genius mangles English like this. He uses words like roosting for sitting. I am roosting in a chair. Do you clutch what I mean? I am girdling this inside the envelope. What else goes on
between you? You have a very good memory.
I like this language.
it's sort of my worst nightmare how often it comes back to me now. People have read the book who say, oh, you've written a premium book. And I need to say, do you think you're the first person who ever thought of that to say that? So Alex lives on, unfortunately. It's my personal hell.
Because one of the things Alex loves to say is, this is a premium moment, Jonathan Safran-Foer.
Right.
You must have laughed out loud at the typewriter when you were writing some of the things that Alex, excuse me, I betray my age of innocence, laughed out loud at the keyboard of the computer when you were writing some of the things Alex says.
Well, I did, and one of the moments when I decided, in fact, I might even say the moment I decided that I really wanted to be a writer was when I was reading the Elman biography of Joyce, and it was describing when he was writing, I think it was Ulysses, it might have been Finnegan's Wake, and he kept his wife awake at night because he was laughing so hard when he wrote, and I thought, this is really something to aspire to. It is the most naked and life-affirming thing. You know, and it's a, you know, more than laughing, I want to make myself cry if I can. And I can sometimes, and I want to be able to do that, and that's what I work toward.
You're so young that when we talk about your early influences, we can go back to college, because that's only a few years ago. You're 25. Joyce Carol Oates was one of your teachers at Princeton.
Right.
You won the writing award every single year that you were at school. Did Joyce Carol Oates give you some, did she say one thing, or was it one transformative moment?
I was, it's a good question because it has a simple answer. I took a writing class with her, and about halfway into the semester, I was sort of loitering outside the class. I was there very early. I always get places early. And she was also early because I think she does the same thing. And she came up and she said, Jonathan, I'm a great admirer of your stories. Just like that, just very straightforward and simple. And her statement just like burned with honesty. There was no question of it being a formality. Just, there never is when she says something. It is just honest and matter of fact, because, you know, she is honest in the other direction as well. I can't tell you how many times she said, Jonathan, I am not an admirer of this. But that was a revelation to me, an absolute revelation.
How different is the Jonathan Safran-Foer, the character, from the author I'm speaking to? And are we going to see this book's Jonathan Safran-Foer again, do you think?
Well, there's sort of a number of questions in your question. One is, how different is the Jonathan Safran-Foer from the Jonathan Safran-Foer who wrote the book? That answer's that's a little bit easier to answer. They're not that far apart. They have the exact same context. I did make the trip that the Jonathan the book makes, and they have many of the same personality traits. And then there's the Jonathan Safran-Foer who's talking to you right now, who I think of as being quite unlike the Jonathan Safran-Foer who wrote the book, and will likely be, you know, very different from the Jonathan Safran-Foer who writes his next book, in which Jonathan Safran-Foer will also appear.
I had a feeling.
But in a different incarnation. He's an 11-year-old. He's sort of an anxiety-stricken 11-year-old.
And it's set in a museum?
It is. It's the story of several different lives converging in the museum of this obscure writer from New York.
Jonathan Safran Foer, it was a real pleasure having you here.
Thank you. It was also a pleasure for me.
Jonathan Safran Foer's novel is called Everything is Eliminated.